As we look at Isaiah chapter 9, we're going to be reminded of some of the things that we've already talked about today, of some of the themes that we have already had going on, and that's okay, because that's what this time of year is all about. This time of year is about focusing on one thing, and that is the coming of Jesus Christ. And so we are going to be taking time this December. I've mentioned Advent. That is, it's not just a word. That's also become a term in our language. And we have used that to talk about kind of Christmas time, the themes of that many churches focus on at Christmas. And so this year we're going to be kind of following that pattern, not exactly, because technically Advent started last Sunday, but we didn't start last Sunday. We waited till December. So today we're going to be looking at the hope of Christmas. The other themes that we will be looking at are going to be the peace of Christmas, the love of Christmas, and then on Christmas Day, we're going to be looking at the joy of Christmas. So this morning, we're going to be starting with the hope of Christmas. What is it that you are hoping for this Christmas? What are you hoping for this Christmas? Or maybe you can think back to a time when you were young and you had hopes for Christmas. I don't know where all of you are at right now. Maybe I know that my children have written about four different Christmas lists, and each one gets longer and longer. Maybe you remember doing that too as a child, or maybe you had children that would do the same thing. They were hoping for lots of toys, for lots of neat things. That's one thing that you could be hoping for this Christmas. Maybe your hopes are not quite so simple. Maybe one of the things that you would hope for would be something like world peace. Or maybe it's just a nice fire on a cool night. You can relax and listen to Christmas carols. That might be something that you're hoping for, a nice, relaxing time. For some, this Christmas, what you're hoping for is healing. And that could be all kinds of things, physical healing, emotional healing, relational healing. There's something that you have had in this last year that has gone wrong, and this Christmas you are hoping for that to be made right. There are all different kinds of things that we could be hoping for, all different levels, from the mundane and things of just a frivolous nature like toys to something as great as healing. And yet I would argue that as important as some of those things are, there's an even greater hope that we all have, an even greater hope that every person has, no matter what came to your mind. And I say that not to belittle your hopes. Your hopes are real, and some of your hopes are very deep. But the ultimate hope that every person holds is the hope that everything sad will be untrue, the hope that every wrong will be made right. Ultimately, that's what we are all hoping for. Whether you're a Christian or not, we are all hoping that the things that we see around us that are wrong will be made right. It's the hope that moves all of human history, the hope that really moves every individual. This is the hope that we read about in the Bible, the hope that everything wrong will be made right. And this is the hope that we're going to be looking at and studying from God's own word. And we're going to do that this morning by opening Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 through 7. So would you listen to Isaiah 9 as I read? But there will be no gloom for her who was in anguish. In the former time, he brought into contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the latter time, he has made glorious the way of the sea, the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, on them has light shone. You have multiplied the nations. You have increased its joy. They rejoice before you as with joy at the harvest, as they are glad when they divide the spoil. For the yoke of his burden and the staff for his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, you have broken as on the day at Midian. For every boot of the tramping warrior in battle tumult, and every garment rolled in blood will be burned as fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of the hosts will do this. This is Isaiah chapter 9, and verses that are probably familiar to you. Again, whether you go to church regularly or not, these are verses that might stand out to you because they have become so famous through song and through Christmas time and Christmas readings and on Christmas cards. And they are very important words. They're words full of hope. Because in Isaiah's day, as Isaiah the prophet was writing this, the nation of Israel was facing darkness. They were actually facing annihilation as a country. They were facing exile. They had disobeyed the word of the Lord, and they were staring down the promised consequences of their unbelief. And yet, right in the midst of their distress, right when they were most worried, God comes and gives them hope in these words. We're going to be looking this morning at two ways that God gives his people hope in this passage. The first is that this is hope of light in darkness. Hope of light in darkness. As with so much prophecy, if you read the prophets in the Old Testament, there are so frequently double meanings that are present in the text. It means kind of two things at once. And I want us to focus on this because I want us to be able to see both of these meanings. They're both important. Sometimes I think as a Western thinker, it's easy for me to see everything as black and white or as either or. That seems to be the way that we like to think about things, especially in our country. Either you are on my side or you are my enemy. Either you agree with my political takes or you are wrong. Right? Those are the only two options. Either or. Either this passage is about the struggle of the nation of Israel thousands of years ago, or this passage is about the spiritual darkness that people live in. I want to suggest that even though that might be the natural way that I think and maybe the natural way that you think, that's not the way that the people of Israel thought, and it's not the way that God thinks. And so it's probably not the most helpful way to think about this passage. This passage, we really should be looking at it as both and. Both and. The people that Isaiah was prophesying to from God, they were facing very dark times. They were in a time of deep distress and fear. They were anguished because they faced this national extermination, slavery to the Assyrian Empire. If you know anything about world history, the Assyrian Empire was a vicious empire. It was brutal to the people that it captured. The stories go that they would take fishing line or rope, and they would take big fish hooks and they would stick it through people's cheeks to walk them to Assyria. This is what the people are facing. The nation of Assyria has come, the mouthpiece of Assyria has come and told them that they're going to come and completely wipe out the nation of Israel, wipe out Judah. They needed a light, they needed hope, they needed something that they could hold on to in the face of the dark days that they were living in. So God comes and he gives them hope, he gives them a light in darkness, the promise of salvation. If they would turn to him, to trust him to save them and not trust to their own armies, their own kings or policies or treaties with other countries, God would come and would save them from their distress. And historically speaking, this is exactly what ends up happening. The people and the king especially turns to God and cries out to him and they pray to him and God delivers them from the nation of Assyria, and Assyria does not attack them. Now, at the same time, the king was also trying to have his cake and eat it too. So he also struck a deal with the nation of Babylon. And Babylon later comes in and ruins the city and takes them into exile. But that's not this part of the story. This part of the story, when they were facing exile to Assyria, they turn to God, and God delivers them and provides a light to the people, salvation from their enemies. So this is the first part of what is going on in this prophecy. Isaiah is speaking to the people, and he tells them, you are in a day of darkness, of fear because of what's going on in front of you. If you turn to the Lord, he will bring light in darkness and provide salvation. And God does that for them, miraculously. I'm not going to go through the whole story of what happens in Isaiah. You can go back and read it. But God miraculously delivers the nation. I keep saying Israel. There is a difference between the nation of Israel and the nation of Judah. I'm using Israel as the broad term here. 10 tribes known as Israel are taken captive by Assyria. It's the two in Judah that are taken captive by Babylon later. So the two in Judah that are saved from the nation of Assyria. But God miraculously delivers his people. He delivers Jerusalem and those that are faithful to him. Now there's a second and I'd say even greater thing that's going on here. We need to see the truth, the reality of the way that God works in history. But there's also a spiritual darkness that God is cluing the people into. God is not bound by this one promise to take away anything and everything, anything that's ever difficult that comes into your life. God is not saying here that if you just believe in him, everything becomes easy and you'll be rich and wealthy and healthy. That's not the point. He's promised a light to those who dwell in darkness. He showed it in that particular instance. But he also shows it to those who are in spiritual darkness. And this is really our greater need. It does not lessen the other physical or emotional needs that we have. But it does, I think, keep them in perspective for us. If this life is all that there is, if there is nothing else except for this life right now, then our physical and emotional comfort would be the most important thing for us. That would be the most important thing that there is, because there is nothing else other than feeling good. But there is a reality that this life is not all that there is. That this life is, in fact, only a moment compared to the eternity that comes, the eternity that God has created us for. It's an important moment that we live in. One that matters to God and one that we go through, we actually experience. So it's a vital and important moment, but it is brief compared to eternity. The eternity of either being with God forever in comfort or cast out into everlasting darkness. This is a reality that's going on, even if we can't see it with our physical eyes. We know that there is darkness around us. We know that we can look at the world and we can see that this is not the way that things ought to be. We can look in our own lives, we can look in our own hearts, and we can say, we are not the people that we are always supposed to be. We know that this is a reality. There is darkness in the world. There is darkness even in our own hearts. And so in this situation that Isaiah was speaking into, God gave light in darkness that Israel was facing right before them. But he's also preparing them. He's preparing them and us to see the greater salvation that is being promised. There is a salvation from the greater darkness that we face, a darkness that goes beyond our physical sight and touch. This is the hope that is a real light in the darkness, because unless you plan on living forever in this world, you need the hope of what is to come. Physical salvation now is good and should be sought, and we can ask the Lord for it, but at best it is temporary. The old saying that there are only a couple of certainties in life, death and taxes, right? Well, death is the only one there that is a certainty. It will come for all of us. So the hope of salvation that we have, the greater light in the greater darkness, is that there is something beyond this life. That anyone can see by this light that is coming. And their sorrow can be turned to joy, their war turned into peace, their burden into gladness. All of these things can be true in some sense now in this life, but in a greater sense in the next. The promises of coming salvation, and that's our real hope, that God will not leave us to face the darkness of death and hell alone, but he will send his light into the world so that we can see and be warmed by that light. Because that light is shining in the darkness, as we read earlier, and the darkness has not overcome it and will not overcome it. That's the first way that God uses this passage to give hope to his people. Just as he provided light in the darkness of their physical circumstances thousands of years ago, he would also provide light in the spiritual darkness for all people. If we are not familiar with the Christmas message, we would want to stop and ask at this point, how? How is God going to do this? How does this become our hope, and what does it have to do with Christmas? The answer is the second part of what this passage is talking about, the second way that God gives hope. He gives the hope of an everlasting son. On its surface, that might not immediately strike us as something that gives us hope. But this is not a general promise that God is making through Isaiah. He continues promises that he has made in the past to include that a son would be born. See, God has given these promises to the nation of Israel in the past. Many of his promises to them he's already kept at this point in history. But some of the promises he has yet to fulfill. And so hearing another promise about salvation was light-giving and was hope-stirring for those people. But this second way of giving hope gets more specific, and God begins to show how he will keep his promises. God had sworn to David, the king, that his heir would sit on the throne forever. But his son Solomon was not the answer to that promise. There was a period of time where it looked like maybe Solomon was the answer to God's promise. But he was not. Things continued to decline. They continued to get worse. And so Solomon is told that most of the kingdom will actually be divided and taken away from him and his sons. And it comes true in his son's life. In Isaiah 9, we see God reaffirming the promise that he had made hundreds of years before to David. And so a son being given, a child being born, that's not really unexpected by the people. They had been waiting a long time for this child to be born that was going to rule forever. But to have God reestablish his commitment and promise that he will fulfill his promise, that is what gives the people hope. And yet there's more. There's more, because who is this child that's going to be born? Verse 6 tells us, gives us some of the titles that he will have. The government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. That's quite a title. It's not a very ordinary title to have. Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. There were some cultures throughout history that saw their kings and rulers as gods in some way, but certainly not in Israel was the king ever confused with or worshipped as the mighty God or the everlasting Father. That was God alone. So this baby that's going to be born, this child who is born, is the fulfillment of a promise. So the people were expecting a son to be given and a child to be born, but they were not expecting this very out of the ordinary child. In fact, he becomes one of the greatest paradoxes that we've ever seen in all of history. He is going to be these same things that are said in this passage, a child and the Wonderful Counselor. Most of us don't think of children as wonderful counselors. But he's also Mighty God and a son. A baby who is the everlasting father. These things don't go together. They are opposites. And so there comes a time when we read this passage that we really do need to ask ourselves, could this possibly be true? It sounds so backwards. It doesn't sound right. And in fact, really what we are left with is we are left to wonder at this. We've probably heard this many times, and maybe some of it has worn off for you a little bit, but these statements are just impossible in our minds. They can't all be true. These aren't things that we can fully wrap our minds around. An ordinary baby who is the God of the universe, the King of Kings, yet born of the Virgin Mary. As one very old Christmas hymn put it, the source and the ending of all things, yet carried to term by a young woman. There are times that I've talked with people who are not Christians, and I have thought, how come you don't understand? This is all so simple. Jesus makes so much sense. Why don't you just listen to what I'm saying and you'll have to become a Christian? But then I read Bible passages like this, or I sing songs like some of these carols that we've sung or that I've quoted, and then I start to realize about the wonder of Christianity and the wonder of Christmas. See, I can understand the point that the Apostle Paul makes in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, where he says that Christianity is foolishness to the world. To believe in this kind of a Savior would make us seem like a fool to the rest of the world. Because God has taken what is foolish in this world and he has declared it to be wisdom. And so those things become a stumbling block. It becomes something that people trip over. It's crazy talk to modern ears. The way that God has provided hope and salvation for us for all of eternity, it really doesn't make sense. So Isaiah can write this wonderfully paradoxical verse that takes on great significance at the birth of Jesus, because it's Jesus who is the mighty God who is born as a perfectly ordinary child. This is what we celebrate at Christmas. This is why it's such an important holiday for Christians, because the birth of Christ is the fulfillment of thousands of years of prophecy, thousands of years of God's promises that a son would be born. A son who is God himself. This is why Christmas is a time of hope. It might be confusing to us at first, but it is what God shows us in his word. And as God comes in, and I mentioned last week that God is a personal God. He is directly involved in bringing us to salvation. He helps us to understand these things that we couldn't understand on our own. But Christmas and the Christmas message brings us hope because Jesus, who was born over 2,000 years ago, he was born as this child who was promised. This child who was promised all the way back in Isaiah and even before that. Jesus will be Emmanuel. It's a word that's come up a couple of times this morning already. Emmanuel means God with us. That's who Jesus really is. He is God of God, light of light, born of a woman to crush the head of the serpent and to bring the knowledge and the light of salvation to the entire world. This is what gives us hope, because we can look at the world around us and our own lives and see the darkness that is here. We know that we have done wrong things. We see wrong things happening around us. We see and hear true evil that is in this world, the deep darkness that our world has sunk into. And it would be truly dark, it would be truly gloomy if we were just left here to grope around in the dark and try and figure it out on our own. If we had to try to save ourselves, there would be no light at the end of the tunnel. How many people have tried to plan their own way of making things better? How many countries have tried to build a utopia, a place where everything is right and nothing goes wrong? How many people have tried and failed to do that. Why does it always fail? Well, it fails because we try to do it in what makes sense in our own minds. We try to do it based on our own understandings and feelings and thoughts. But when it doesn't make sense to our minds, even if it doesn't make sense to our minds, we have a great hope that there is one who is greater than us. So we can actually trust him and his plan, because he's wiser than us, and he has promised to bring light into this dark world. And he's followed that promise up by sending Jesus to be born at Christmas time. So we can continue to have hope, because he has promised to come back for us as well. Advent is a time that we look forward to Christmas, the coming of Jesus, but it's also a time of year where we look forward to Jesus coming back. Christmas is not just hopeful for people that were living before Jesus. It is hopeful for us, knowing that because God has kept his promises to send the light into the world, he will be faithful to keep his promise to send him back for that future full salvation. This is the hope of Christmas. The hope is this, that God has sent his Son. That's what we celebrate at Christmas. And it remains hopeful because he will come back and make everything sad come untrue, everything wrong to be made right. It's a hope that we need, or else the darkness would overwhelm us. But we have that light in us, those who trust in Jesus Christ and in his way of salvation. There is a light that the darkness has not and cannot overcome. This is the hope that we have every day, that Christ is in us and will come again. This is the hope that we can be reminded of even at Christmas time.